This is DZPN, the Drunken Zombie Podcasting Network.
Hello, and welcome to a very special edition of Lights Out. This is your host, Sylvia Schultz. I have been a paranormal investigator for several years, and I've been fascinated with the supernatural for pretty much all of my life. I've read countless stories of spirits, both benevolent and evil. I've been in plenty of spooky places. Sometimes I've had the comfort of other investigators with me. Sometimes I've braved the unknown by myself, but I have never felt myself to be in danger from any demonic entity. Other people are not so lucky. Join me for a frightening true story of demonic attachment. We'll meet Linda, a paranormal investigator who ran afoul of not one, but three evil entities. Hold my hand tightly as we go. Lights Out. Today's podcast of Lights Out is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/DZPN. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. I met Linda several years ago while I was researching the hauntings at the Peoria State Hospital. Linda shared the experiences she and her group, Central Illinois Ghost Hunters, had had at the asylum. We met at the Cantina, a bar in Pekin that has its own ghostly residence. After our talk, Linda went through the bar, pointing out paranormal hotspots and explaining the feelings of dread and sadness that bar staff had experienced in certain places in the building. For more information, I invite you to listen to the Lights Out show, number 8, The Cantina. I was struck by the compassion Linda clearly felt for the souls of people who had passed on. Sometime later, Linda came to see me at the library where I work. She told me that she had had a terrifying experience. She'd suffered through a severe case of a demonic oppression, in which three demons had attacked and tormented her. We sat down together, and she shared her story with me. The story began months before, when Linda founded the investigating group Central Illinois Ghost Hunters.
Because I felt like that there were so many people that I was running into that were telling me that their children were scared, that they were terrified, that things were happening in their house, that there was knockings, that their child wouldn't sleep in their room, and that they had called their pastor, they had called their priest, and then no one would come. Either they didn't believe them, or they were too busy, or they just didn't, you know, didn't want any part of it. And so I thought, well, there's a need. There's so many people out there that need help. And the group that we put together, we were very blessed in that we had the right mixture of people. Each one had a special, unique gift and a talent that I don't know if separate it would have gone as well as it did, but together and cohesive, we made an excellent group.
Linda and her group were very aware of the dangers posed by the occult.
we begin to find people lying to us. You know, like the first questions that I would ask when we would, before we would go into an investigation was, have you had anything to do with the occult? Do you play the Ouija board? Do you have seances? Have you been involved in witchcraft or Satanism or, you know, blah, 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 all the way down? And the answer was always no.
No, of course not. We didn't do anything like that.
No. And so, but then when we were doing an investigation, we did one in Bartonville. Mm-hmm. And the lady's daughter, little girl, 8 years old, could not sleep in her room. Mm-hmm. And the baby would wake up and cry every night, mm-hmm. which was upstairs. The little girl was down. The baby was upstairs. So when I walked into the little girl's room, it was like entering a vortex. Mm. It was like that. Have you ever felt that? Where it's like you walk into a room and it's spinning. And I mean, we all felt it. We literally had to like touch the wall to, you know, to be able to catch our bearing for a second. It was so strong in there. And I thought, no wonder. Time. Mm. But after we did that investigation, and I mean, the basement was just full of things. Full of people and things. Mm. And after we did that investigation, then the next day, the lady called me and said, oh, by the way, I forgot that I had tarot cards in the drawer right upstairs across from the baby sleeps.
Oh, man.
I said, oh, how can you just forget that?
Oh, my.
But that, you know.
Well, if she doesn't concentrate on them all the time, yeah. If it's just a thing that she interacts with occasionally, it could slip her mind. I could see that happening.
But still, when someone asks you, have you ever? You know, if I would have said, Sylvia, have you ever had? You know, and you would have said, well, yeah I used to, or I do once in a while.
Thought back, yeah.
Yeah.
It's designed to jog your memory.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And so, and then we went to a place in Metamora, mm-hmm. and this was a place that literally made me sick. I have never physically gotten sick in a place before. And I didn't throw up, but it physically made me sick. Mm. When there was the man that had called us in, I could not stand to be near him. He was like, he scratched my spirit. I don't know if you've ever run into anybody that you felt like, oh, I don't want to be near him mm-hmm. or her. But it was like the sandpaper. Every time he would come within as close as you and me, I would want to just scream.
That's an intriguing way
for me
to describe it.
Yeah, he would scratch. Yeah, he would just scratch my soul.
Okay.
And so I didn't want him in my camper because we always took the motorhome because we could all travel together and discuss what we found. And But anyway, come to find out, we went downstairs in the basement. I mean, upstairs, I still had this eerie feeling. Mm-hmm. And every time he was near me, it was like scratching my spirit. Mm. The whole place was just odd, you know, just had an odd feel to it.
That I have experienced, yeah.
And we went downstairs into the basement, and as we were starting into the basement, this god-awful smell that I've never smelled before literally made me nauseous. Mm. And the funny part is that my group, they smelled it upstairs. They could smell something upstairs, and I couldn't smell a thing. But when we started going to the basement, I was so overwhelmed by this smell, and they didn't smell a thing. And I was thinking all the time, oh my gosh, if I don't get out of here, I'm going to throw up in this basement. I'm going to throw up if I don't get out of here.
Oh no.
And I literally said, I've got to go. And I ran up the stairs. I went out to the motorhome, and I still, for like an hour, you know, the whole time they were in there, I smelled this hideous smell. Mm. Come to find out, this guy was practicing Satanism.
The group was running into some pretty odd situations in their investigating.
You know, we started running into strange people, but I still didn't think anything about it. We had 44 cases in 1 year. I mean, we were busy every weekend and sometimes during the week.
Oh, gee whiz.
Yeah, and what was happening was there towards the end, I could tell that the spirits, there was something different. Mm. Because when I would always say, turn off the light, turn on the light, they would do what I asked them to do. Mm-hmm. But then it got so that they were getting a little obstinate, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't turn it off as fast when I'd ask. You know, and I started thinking, first I said, I think the spirits are getting stronger. But then it never dawned on me that I was getting weaker.
Linda was staying out very late on Saturday nights, doing investigations, and she wasn't getting up for church on Sundays. She wasn't feeding her soul.
We did that. We had another big case. Mm. And this one was in Pekin. Mm-hmm. And I had been thinking, I had this feeling, and I should have listened to it. You know, but still, I believe that God knows what we're going to do from the day we're born on. We have freedom of choice mm-hmm. and freedom of free will. But I believe that whatever we choose leads us down a different path. Mm-hmm. You know, if we make one decision, we go this way. If we make another, we go this way.
Sure, yeah.
And so I'd been feeling like, you know, I really need to stop doing what we're doing. Mm-hmm. The investigations weren't interesting me anymore. It was just the prayer part. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just wanted to clear the house out. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted whatever was there, be it good, to go home, mm-hmm. to be it bad, to go away. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that became my goal. I wasn't interested in answering, you know, the flashlights going on and off. And
yeah.
And so I felt like I needed to stop doing it 2 weeks before.
Okay.
And I was going to actually give it to a member of my group named Beth. You met Beth.
Mm, oh, yeah.
Well, Beth, I didn't know, was having kind of the same feelings that she needed to leave the group.
Mm.
You know, she needed to leave the group. Mm-hmm. So the week before I told the group that I was leaving, Beth told me she was leaving.
Oh.
So I didn't have anyone that I actually, yeah, wanted to turn the group over with.
Right.
But before that happened, we went to Pekin.
Mm-hmm.
And this was another strange house. There was a lot going on there. There was a dad and a mom and a little 3-year-old girl and a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And there was her aunt, who was also very young. They're all within their 20s, you know, living in this house. And this little 3-year-old started seeing, there was a place in the basement that was really creepy. I mean, really, it was a circular thing.
Hmm.
It was really odd.
Mm-hmm.
It was in this old house, but it was dirt floor, but it had, like, stone circle around it.
Okay.
And when I started to open that door, I know I'm regressing, but when I started to open that door, I felt the most weird feeling. And I thought, this is a gathering place. This is a gathering place. Well, and this little 3-year-old girl, she would hear people call her to the basement.
Ooh.
Yeah. And her parents, she would go down there and she would work in the workshop with her daddy.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd always want to go in this room. And they would never let her in there, mm-hmm. thank goodness. But
yeah.
We went back there several times. And I had a feeling that it had to do with voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
so,
what you usually find in Central Illinois.
So I didn't know.
Yeah.
And but anyway, when I was listening to these EVPs, I actually heard a black woman like telling me, come on down, I'm waiting on you.
Whoa.
Yeah, see, but I couldn't hear with my ears.
Right.
But on the tape, I heard her say. So, yeah. So when we went to do this investigation, we went in here, and I mean, she answered every question that we asked her. You know, I said, were you into hoodoo or voodoo? Yes. And I said, were you brought over here as a slave? I said, were you a slave? Yes.
Mm.
I said, did you practice your religion down here? Yes.
Oh, man.
You know, I said, are you wanting this 3-year-old child for something? Yes.
Mm.
You know, and I said, are you after her soul? Are you after her reincarnation? What, you know, yes, yes, yes.
Oh, my.
And the parents were standing right with me when this was going on.
Uh-huh. Were you asking these flashlight questions?
Or yeah.
Okay.
Flashlight and recorder.
We had
everyone had a recorder, and this is what's so cool. This
okay.
was one powerful lady. Everyone had a recorder, and I looked around the room. Every red light was on.
Mm.
When we went back to listen to that whole conversation, we were down there 30, 35 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
When we went back to listen to that whole section on nobody's recorder recorded.
Ooh.
It started at the top of the stairs on the first and second floor. There was not one part of the basement.
Oh, my.
It was like it was totally erased from everybody's recorder. None. Nothing.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And I thought, holy cow. There was also a little girl upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And she would say, aw. I can't remember what she called this lady, grandma or auntie.
Mm.
But she would say, they can't see us. They're just kidding. You know? And so that's where I got into trouble. But before I do that, I want to tell you about this little girl.
Yeah, please.
Because the little girl, they would start showing themselves in the form of her dad. They would come in the middle of the night. It would be her daddy. And he would say, come with me, honey. Let's go down in the basement and play.
Ooh.
And this was on a Saturday morning, and this was not in the middle of the night this time. This was like, maybe 8, 9 o'clock, 8:30, 7 to 8. Because mm-hmm. the dad happened to be gotten up early and was laying on the couch watching, just turning on the cartoons. Mm-hmm. And he saw his little girl come downstairs, and she grabbed his hand. And she says, "Well, come on, Daddy, let's go." And he says, "Let's go where?" He says, "Well, you told me it's time to go play in the basement." And he says, "No, honey, I didn't tell you that." And she says, "Yes, you did, Daddy. You just stood upstairs. You said, 'Come on, let's go.'" And he says, "No, I didn't tell you that." So I told the parents, I said, what better way? And the mother didn't believe. The dad was concerned. The mother didn't believe until she saw the lights coming on. Uh-huh. But I told them, I said, what better way for something to grab your child if they can convince the parents that their child is in no danger? Uh-huh. I said, what does a child predator do? They get close to your child. I said, what are they doing? They're appearing to your child as someone she loves, her daddy, her caretaker. And what is the mother doing? They have blinded the mother to where there's no danger. Yeah. So because a mother, that mommy blood gets going and you would kill over your child.
Right.
But they were appearing in the form of the dad. And the mother, they had blinded to where she saw no danger.
Mm.
Yeah. So anyway, and then the aunt, the when we came back to pray out that house, mm-hmm. the aunt, she says, "Linda, can I show you something?" And I said, "Yeah." She says, "I keep hearing my uncle telling me to come to him, and he had died." Yeah, this house was strange.
Mm.
And she pulled up her arm, and she had cut herself all from here to here.
Oh, poor girl.
And, yeah. But the thing is, on my tapes, it had said, "Let's get the aunt. Let's get the aunt." And the aunt was, I think, 23 years old. That girl died. Within a month later, she was dead. She went out to the garage to smoke a cigarette. Her little girl came in the house and told her aunt, "I can't wake up mommy. Mommy's sleeping." Yeah. So I don't know. I won't say that that's what caused it. That's far be it for me to do that.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, it was all weird.
The strangeness continued on other nights in other houses.
When I heard the little girl say, "They can't see us. They're just kidding," right? So then we went from there. And like I said, we had had 44 cases in a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't been fed. My spirit was weak. Mm-hmm. And we had just come home from this investigation at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. We had a house cleansing that we had gone to before, and one of my investigators got sick in this house and had to leave.
Mm.
And that was a phenomenal thing, and I think I might still have some of the EVPs of that too.
Mm-hmm.
But there was actual a fight there for us.
Mm.
Yeah, and you could hear a sword, literally a sword being pulled from a sheath.
Holy cats.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool. Anyway, in this house, my friend Debbie, she got really sick in this house and had to leave this house. But there was something. When upstairs in the lady's room, I touched her bed, and it was like a vibration. Have you ever done that? You could feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "They sit on your bed." I said, "They sit on your bed." And she said, "Yeah." She said, "That's right where I've seen this thing sit at night and look at me." And her husband had seen it too. And, it gives me creeps even thinking about that thing.
Right.
Okay. And then the third house that we went to, this house was in,
What was sitting on the bed in the second house habitually?
I think it was just a dark, ugly little thing.
Okay.
Whatever you want to call them. An imp, whatever you want to call them. A dark, ugly, nasty little thing.
Okay.
That would torment her. He would torment her. He was a tormentor.
Okay. All right, third house.
Okay. And this is the one we went to. This was outside of town, and I cannot think of the name. I don't want to say Mackinac. Maybe it was right outside of Mackinac.
Okay.
But when you drove up to this house, these kids were doing weird things, too. They were having, seance in this house.
Mm-hmm.
But when you walked into this house, you had this really oppressive feeling, just really oppressive. And the people had, and these were business people. I can't give you their names.
No, that's
fine. Confidentiality. But they were really well expected in there. They had a sliding glass door, and something banged so hard on their sliding glass door that it actually cracked it. And there was no one there.
Mm.
There was no one there. And when we were asking that, we were asking, were you the one that broke this door? Flashlight. Yes. But in the, on the EVPs, it was saying, get out. You know, get out. And so when we went into the kitchen, we went through all these different rooms. Flashlight, of course, went all every place. The recorders were going. The videos was going. But the homeowner actually saw, I could feel something go by me to the basement. Just, and we'd already been in the basement. But the homeowner saw it. She saw a shadow. She goes, did you see that? Did you see that? I saw it go in the basement. Mm-hmm. And so we all went down after it to, you know, to try to make it leave. Yeah. But when we came back to actually do the house cleansing of this house, when I walked in this house, there was, for one split second, I saw something very tall, like as tall as that door, dark. And I don't know how to explain it. This sounds totally insane. But it kind of looked like a figure of a bat, you know, like the figures... the shoulders were angled.
Okay.
And I don't know if it had like a robe like this, you know, holding a robe, or if that was just its shape.
Mm-hmm.
But for 1 second I saw it, 1 second it was gone.
Oh.
You know.
Or furled wings or something.
Maybe, something weird. And then the homeowner told me that the mailman actually had seen a creature similar to what I described, and it scared him so bad he quit. He quit his route. Because they lived in this rural, and I think it's Mackinac, if I remember right.
Uh-huh.
But he actually, it's terrified him, and he quit his route.
For you, yes you, the listeners of the Lights Out podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Free audiobooks include such titles as The Top 10 Things Dead People Want to Tell You by Mike Dooley, Death by Black Hole and Other Cosmic Quandaries by Neil deGrasse Tyson, and Spook, Science Tackles the Afterlife by Mary Roach. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/DZPN. Again, that's audibletrial.com/DZPN. For your free audiobook. 1 July evening, Linda came home very late from an investigation. She was hot, she was tired, and her defenses were down.
But anyway, I stood in the middle of my living room floor and I prayed, Father, you know, I think that I could help them more if I could hear them. Please, let me hear them. Instantly. This was like I said, to say it out loud almost sounds insane, but it is the actual truth. I heard like a bell. You know those little bells like you hear in church when they were, a Catholic church where they go ding,
oh, sure.
ding, ding.
Yeah.
I heard a bell. Ding, 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 ding.
Ah.
Let her hear. And then I started hearing two male voices and a woman voice. There were three of them. And they started tormenting me day. They were tormentors day and night. I could not sleep. My poor husband, he did not know what was going on with me. My children didn't know what was going on with me. But, I mean, it was like somebody screaming in my ear, and they were saying, I want your soul. You know, and then and they started telling me things that I had done from the beginning of my life all the way up. That's what I'm saying. This is the strangest thing, and I think God let me see all this for a reason. Maybe for you, you know, too. But they started telling me things that I had even forgotten. Things that, you know, you did this, you did that, you did this, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Mm. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. You know, oh, stop. And I started on this journey. I mean, I called a man. I don't know if I still have his phone number. But somebody told me that there was an exorcist up in Wisconsin.
Mm.
And I would call him on the phone in the middle of the night. He'd say, call me. And he would say prayers with me.
Mm.
And then he would ask me, what are they saying? And I said, they told me that you're not a real exorcist, that you were not, or you're not an ordained minister.
Mm.
And he says, it doesn't matter if I'm ordained. They knew. You know, that's what I'm saying. They know. The supernatural realm knows far more than what we could ever know. Uh-huh. And to know that now, I mean, I actually know that. And my son, my poor little son, I was telling him, I was saying, he told me, Mom, because my daughter had called him, because I said, Danette, excuse me 1 minute. I went into the restroom and I just started praying because these things were screaming at me while I was trying to talk to my daughter.
Oh, Jesus.
And I went in the restroom and I just started praying, God, I lay my, you know, you say we are saved by the word of our mouth and the word of our testimony. And I said, I love you, Father God. I choose you, the Father and the Holy Spirit. I always will choose you. I want no other but you. And that is a word of my testimony. And I wrap it up and I lay it on your holy altar because you say, whatever we say goes right into your throne. Mm. And I said, so Lord, I lay it at your feet. I only want you. I only want you help me through this. And I mean, I would cry. I would beg, you know, Lord God. And I would, you know, just... And my daughter was concerned. She went and called my son, who's very logical-minded. This is my young child. He's an entrepreneur, businessman, very logical.
Ah.
And he says, Mom, I'm a little concerned about you. And he says, you think you need to go to a psychiatrist? I said, Bobby, I said, if your little child broke his leg, would you take him to a gardener? No. I said, I don't need to go to a doctor. I need to go to spiritual help. I said, this is a spiritual battle, and I need to find help within the church. I went to...
This was the beginning of months of torment. Linda sought help from an exorcist in the Quad Cities. She went through 2 exorcisms, but they made no difference at all. She wasn't possessed. She was suffering from demonic attachment, which is quite different.
Who is the exorcist for the Diocese of Rock Island. Ooh. He is retired, and I went to see him twice. And I would tell him, he would read from the book, and they would be screaming, you know, in the background. And I would tell him...
He couldn't hear it, but you could. Okay.
I could hear it, because it was me that they were attacking. It was me that prayed. It was me that God was taking on this journey, you know.
Yeah.
But I would tell him everything that they were saying, and he was amazed, too. Mm. But I said, I am not possessed. I said, they are not possessing... possessing me. I said, they are oppressing me. They are around me. So the rite of exorcism wasn't working.
It's not going to do anything.
They're not in me. You know, they are around me.
Yeah.
And they did not know what to do with the fact that they were around me.
Yeah.
Linda's search for help continued.
I kept trying to find help. I had an old prayer partner. His name is Dichter. And he's been with me on this whole journey. And I would call him and say, Dick, please pray for me. I don't know what... I can't stand this. I can't... They would wake me up in the middle of the night screaming in my ear, wake up! You know, and I would jump up out of bed. And my husband would say, what are you doing? And I would be going, I can't stand this, Jerry. I can't stand this. And I would go call this guy up in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And I'd say, Mike, you got to pray for me. You got to help me.
Yeah.
So he was helping me during this time. And I look back and I see... that God had different people helping me along the way to lead me to the Abbey.
Mm.
You know, I had to be ready. You know what I mean? I had to be ready to receive what I needed to receive. So he had provided me this guy named Mike. So then from there, I had a friend that was a counselor at Antioch Group, and she had been a missionary in China. And I called her, and I said, Donna, I said, I know you believe in these things. I know you've seen things on your mission trip. I know you know this is real and that I'm not crazy, that these things are really tormenting me. And I said, do you know anyone that I can go to that would pray for me and help me through this or give me direction as to what I needed to do? At that time, I was in a panic. You know, the Lord says in his word, he says, do not be anxious for anything, but by everything, with prayer and supplication, make your request be known for God. But that time, I mean, you got to figure, I got 3 people or things screaming at me all the time.
Makes it hard to concentrate.
I was in a panic. Yeah, I was in a panic. So I asked Donna, do you have anybody, you know, that can help me? Because I had been to 7 priests, 2 exorcisms, and, you know, and then I went to Donna, and this is how the Lord worked. Because Donna, bless her heart, had made a mistake, but that mistake led me to where I needed to go. But let me back up. First of all, I called Dick, and I said one morning, I was having a really bad screaming, I want your soul, we're going to take your soul. And I called Dick, and I said, Dick, I said, these things are just screaming at me, and I said, I need prayer. And he says, honey, come over to where I'm at. I'm sitting over here working on a house with 2 other guys that are believers. And he says, come over here, and we'll pray for you. Well, my husband wouldn't let me drive because I was... So
yeah,
he drove me over there. Well, when we got there, they had a priest on the phone. And I was trying to tell this priest what was happening to me, and I got kind of hateful with this man because he says, "You have a problem being quiet." And I said, "As do you." You know, because I had a chance for a priest listening to me, and I wanted him to hear I needed help desperately.
Yeah.
So in the background, you can hear these bells. And he says, "I have to go now. I have to take care of my duties here." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Father, don't forget me." Mm-hmm. You know, I said, "Father, don't forget me."
Yeah.
So then I went to Donna, you know, and Donna says, you know, she emailed two different people that had been ministers in Vietnam, but neither one of them had emailed her back. So she called me back, and she says, "Lynn, I'm so worried about you. I'm praying for you all the time." And she says, "You know what?" She says, "There's a little monk that comes in here every morning and says prayers for us. He dresses in brown." And she says, "I think it's from the Abbey." So, and this is kind of neat, too, because they don't dress in brown. They dress in black. She had made a mistake. There was somebody that was coming in there praying, but it wasn't from the Abbey. Mm-hmm. But God had used that to lead me to the Abbey. So I called on the phone, and I said, "This is Linda Hamburg, and I need help." I said, I'm in a battle for my life, a spiritual warfare, and I said, "I need help." And this voice on the other line, this is cool, this voice on the other line was very calming and not excitable, just very calming, and said, "Come see Father Lewis tomorrow at 1:00. And I said, "Okay, no accident, no nothing. Come see Father Lewis tomorrow at 1:00. I said, "All right, I'll do that." Well, I went to Mass that early morning because through all this, I started going to church every single day. I thought, I need my spirit fed. Yeah. I'm in the battle for my life. I need my spirit fed. Yeah. And so I couldn't sit still during Mass. I mean, they were screaming at me. And I told my husband, I said, "Jerry, I cannot wait till 1:00 to go see this priest." I said, "I don't care." He said, "Your appointment's not till 1:00. I said, "I don't care." I said, "If you don't want to sit there with me, drop me off." I said, "Leave me there. But I can't wait." I said, "I can't wait. I have to go now. I have to go now." You know, I just knew I had to go then. Mm-hmm. So when we pulled into this little abbey, there was this guy walking out with shorts on. And he was throwing his keys up in the air, just walking to his car, right?
Yeah.
And here, this crazy woman, I jump out of the car, and I run to this stranger, and I said, "I need help." I said, "I have an appointment at 1:00 with Father Abbott, with Father Lewis." But I said, "I need help now. I can't do this. I need help now." And he goes, "You go over to the church." He says, "I will go get him." But he stood there and looked at me for a minute. You know, but I didn't know he had a gift of discernment. He could see, he knew that these things were around me.
Ooh.
And this was the bishop. I didn't know I was talking to the bishop.
Oh, my.
So the bishop went into the house, and this is where it gets really cool. And then Father Lewis met me all in black, and I told him the whole thing. Uh-huh. And he goes, "You're the one that said, 'Father, don't forget me.'" And I said, "Are you that priest?" And he said, "Yes, I am." And he says, "When you said that," he said, "it went straight to my soul." And he said, "I've never forgotten you." He said, "I pray for you every day." He said, "I have prayed for you every day." And so anyway, the bishop came, and he was dressed in his robes too. They took me into this little room off the side of his office. Mm-hmm. I'll take you out there sometime and show you the Abbey.
Yes.
And
meet
and introduce you to the father.
I would be very grateful.
And the bishop. They would love to talk to you.
Okay.
But anyway, they took me to this little room off of the church, and I knelt down on this little table. And I don't remember much of this, but Father Lewis put his hand on my head, and the bishop put like a cross on my head, and they started praying. You know, and I was reading this prayer. They had given me this prayer to read. So I was reading this prayer, and my husband was sitting in the corner. Mm-hmm. And then the bishop says, "Linda, there is a little boy that is attached to you. You know, he loves your mother figure, your caring, your protectiveness. You need to tell him to leave, to go to the Father right now, that the Father will take better care of him than you ever could take care of him."
Yeah.
And so I said, "Go, honey, go to the Father. He will love you. He will take care of you. You will be with family that you've never known. You will be safe and loved and protected and never be afraid again." Me and the abbot, Father Lewis, audibly heard, "Thank you." Just like we had on the recorder, but this was out loud. We both audibly heard it. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and he said, "Did you hear that?" I said, "I did."
Oh, my goodness.
I know. And then, this is how God has worked through this whole thing and is still working.
Yeah.
About, 3-4 months after I knew him, and we became real close. You know, it was a deep connection for all the prayers that they have helped me through. Because, I mean, it has been an ongoing battle with these things, you know, and they've prayed over me and with me and just came out to the car and got me and prayed there in the car because these things would be talking, you know, and they'd pray and pray and pray. And so anyway, Father Lewis says, Linda, I think we're close now. I'm going to tell you something. He says, you know when you told me that you had an appointment at 1 o'clock that day? He said, I had a luncheon at 1 o'clock that day. He said, I didn't have an appointment with you. And I said, a man told me to come see you at 1 o'clock, but I couldn't wait. He said, well, if you would have waited, I would have been gone. And he said, I ask every monk in this place, no one had a phone call from you. I think I talked to an angel. I think I talked to an angel that was leading me to Father Lewis and the bishop at just the right time when the bishop was leaving.
Oh.
You know, he was leaving, but I think I talked to an angel. I truly believe I did, and so does he. You know, because no one else was there.
Wow.
The consequences of Linda's deliverance are still being felt today within her family.
But there's so much in between all this that happened. Because of this, my husband became baptized. Because of this, we both became confirmed in the church.
Mm.
You know, because of this, my son in Texas is now becoming a believer. Because of this, my son Bobby sought his minister out that was in Morton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I think my mom's going loco and because she thinks she hears these things that are haunting her soul. And the minister explained to him spirituality, so his growth has deepened.
Uh-huh.
So the word says, you know, what is done, what they intend for evil, God intends for good. So he turned all that evilness around for something good.
Yeah.
And not only that, then I can help people. You know, I always said, I will never look at anyone who says they hear voices the same way again.
Yeah.
You know, yes, I'm going to make sure they're not crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they're not schizo or, you know, I want to make clear all that out. Like, why would God have allowed me to go through something so horrendous for over 2 years?
Yeah.
You know, but it has increased my faith. It has made me, it has brought me to the realization that if this happened to me, that there are others that need help, and people aren't helping them because people aren't going to believe them.
Yeah.
You know, if I was a stranger and I walked up to you and said, Sylvia, I'm hearing, you know, these things that are screaming at me, you know what I'm saying?
I definitely take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah. There has to be a way of presenting this in a way that it doesn't scare people, but yet that they know it's real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Bible says, test and try the spirits. You know, we're not to believe every spirit.
Mm.
So, there's so many things still going. It's a growth process in me, and I'm a lifetime student anyway, so it's all right. I'm ready for a growth process.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I'm thinking, I want to get the story out. I want to help people that are in dire need of help where people aren't being helped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because people think, you know, they need to go to a psychiatrist. Oh, they, you know, they're just your imagination.
Thank you so much for joining me for this special edition of Lights Out. For much more on Linda's experiences, and for a look at a history of demons and exorcism, I hope you'll pick up a copy of Hunting Demons, published by Whitechapel Press. The book can be purchased on Amazon, and is also available at whitechapelpress.com or prairieghosts.com. And if you have questions, or if you are experiencing spiritual troubles of your own, I encourage you to contact Linda at huntingdemons@yahoo.com. Again, thank you for listening. Join us next time when we'll kick off our author series. The amazing Tamara Thorne will return and share with us the inspiration for the ghostly novel, The Cliff House Haunting. Other authors will feature in upcoming shows include Luke Naliborski, Alistair Cross, Ophelia Julian, and many more. They'll all be ready to share their stories with you the next time we go Lights Out. Yeah.
چه هداش دیلم یکه دشلا اون جلوهی یکه بندتر.